I'm Gabe Snyder, and you're listening to Drinking and Droshing, Torah with a Twist. And honestly, this is one of my favorite Torah portions. So last year, they just let me take over the show and kind of do whatever I wanted for Parashat Vezot HaBracha. So this year, I'm taking over again, but all by myself. Let's go. Moses, knowing his death is drawing near, blesses each of the tribes. He prays for life for Reuben, restoration and protection for Judah, holiness for Levi, security for Benjamin, prosperity for Joseph, happiness and riches for Zebulun, size for Gad, strength for Dan, territory for Naphtali, and the greatest blessings for Asher. I guess he ran out of specifics. Moses then ascends Mount Nebo to the summit of Pisgah opposite Jericho, and God shows him the whole land, Gilead as far as Dan, all of Naphtali, Ephraim, and Manasseh, Judah, the Negev, the plains, and valleys. God reiterates that this is the land promised to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. The promise is finally being fulfilled. Though Moses sees the whole land, he will not be allowed to enter. Moses, now 120 years old, with undimmed eyes and unabated vigor, then dies by the mouth or command of God. Moses is buried, though both his interrer and the location of his grave are mysteries. The Israelites mourn for 30 days. At the end of this period of mourning, Joshua, son of Nun, whom Moses had appointed as his successor, takes control of the people. The Torah ends with these words: "Never again did there arise in Israel a prophet like Moses, whom the Eternal signaled out face to face. For the various signs and wonders the Eternal sent him to show in the land of Egypt against Pharaoh, and for the great might and awesome power that Moses himself displayed before all of Israel." And that is Parashat Vezot HaBracha. Now, there's a lot that can be said about this Torah portion. There are several moments that almost seem to call for Midrash. First of which is this idea that Moses gets to see the whole land, that Moses goes to the summit of Mount Nebo, which is a real place. You can actually go there. There's a monastery there. And God shows him the whole land, and it very specifically says Gilead as far as Dan, all of Naphtali, Ephraim, and Manasseh, Judah, the Negev, and the plains and valleys. And it's worth mentioning that Dan and Naphtali and Ephraim and Manasseh and Judah, none of these places really exist yet. They're not established yet. The territory hasn't even really been marked out. And so there's a big question there of how is Moses seeing all of this? Is he just seeing the land, or is he really seeing the boundaries? In that way, is he able to kind of not only see farther geographically than he should be able to see, but also farther in time? Is Moses kind of transcending not only space, but also time at this moment? So Moses is 120 years old, which we'll ignore, like, how ridiculous that is. But he dies with undimmed eyes and unabated vigor, and dies by the mouth of God, al pi Adonai. And there are a few examples of people dying al pi Adonai, one of them being Moses, another being Aaron. And this gets kind of midrashically interpreted as being the kiss of death, being kind of a moment where God really, in the same way that God blows life into the nostrils of Adam, really takes life away in much the same way. And I think there's something really beautiful about that physicality of death, that God really touches Moses in order to finally take his life. Moses being buried by somebody, it's unclear by whom, and in a location that is also unknown or unclear, really does serve a purpose. there's a tradition that we're not supposed to know the grave of Moses because then it could become a shrine. The Torah takes a lot of pains, and our tradition takes a lot of pains in order to really make clear that Moses is not God. And there are a lot of moments where that's confusing or where that doesn't exactly seem to line up with the tradition. Moses is not divine, period. And also, Moses is told he will be not like a god, but he will be God to Pharaoh. He will be Elohim. At the very end of this Torah portion, we see the great might and awesome power that Moses displayed before all of Israel. Not that Moses wielded, but that Moses displayed. That's a really interesting and kind of difficult juxtaposition to kind of hold in both hands, that Moses is explicitly not divine, that we're absolutely not supposed to revere Moses as divine. We can't know the location of the grave just in case somebody was going to use it as a shrine. And yet, Moses has this power. Moses is different, is separate from all of the other prophets. Moses is singled out face to face. It's a really difficult thing to deal with. How is Moses supposed to be read? If he's not supposed to be like all of the other prophets, what is he? So I don't have an answer to that question. I just don't. I don't think anybody does. But I think it's worth thinking about, and I think it's worth mentioning. I also think it's worth mentioning my personal favorite midrash. This comes out of Devarim Rabbah, Deuteronomy Rabbah, a collection of midrash all about Deuteronomy. The midrash basically says that when Moses ascended Mount Nebo and it was time for him to die, Moses' soul refused to leave Moses' body. And the angels tried to get the soul to leave the body, but the soul refused and said, "How am I supposed to leave a body, a person as pure as Moses?" And so God descends, God's self extracts the soul of Moses. And God speaks to Moses' soul, who is gendered as female. God says, "My daughter, sit down." And the soul sits down, and God says, "Put your arms across your chest," and the soul does so. And God says, "Cross your legs," and the soul does so. And God, at that moment, kisses away the soul of Moses. I think there's something really interesting there, that God has this incredibly personal, intimate relationship with Moses at this time. So that's my favorite midrash. I hope you enjoy it. This week on Midrashic Mixology, I'm going to just replay the same drink I made last year because honestly, it's excellent and I can't improve on it. This one is the Bittersweet Kiss. Start by rimming a glass with bittersweet chocolate shavings. Do this by grating the chocolate very finely, placing a very thin rim of chocolate syrup on the glass with your fingertip, and dipping in the chocolate shavings to coat. In a cocktail shaker, combine 1 ounce of chocolate liqueur, 1 ounce of creme de cacao, 1 ounce of coffee vodka, and 1 ounce of half and half or milk of your preferred dairiness. For the vodka, I'm a big fan of Death Wish Coffee Vodka made by Albany Distillers, which has the added bonus of truly making this drink the kiss of death. That's Death Wish Coffee Vodka. Shake with ice and strain into your prepared martini glass. Finally, drop in a single Hershey Kiss. Unwrap it first to sink to the bottom of the opaque drink, obscured as Moses' final resting place. For a non-alcoholic version, use 1.5 ounces of half and half or milk of your preferred dairiness, 1.5 ounces of chocolate syrup, and a shot of espresso. Shake with ice, strain into the prepared glass, and give it a kiss. Delicious as it is, there's something bittersweet about this cocktail. Maybe it's the bittersweet chocolate, or maybe it's just that it's the last parasha. Don't worry, though. We'll be rolling back our Torah scrolls and mixing up new drinks next week. Chazak, chazak, v'nit chazik. May we all be as strong as our heaviest pores. And, as always, l'chaim. Vizota Bracha is the last parasha that we will read in our Torah. Moses will die, the people will cry, and then we will say goodbye. Yadadai, 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 yadadai. I'm Gabe Snyder, and you're listening to Drinking and Drashing, Torah with a Twist. Chazak, chazak, v'nit chazik. May we be strong, strong, and may we strengthen one another. L'chaim.